This is Bullcast, an audio production of the Office of the Staffer's Advocate. Bullcast provides subject matter expert discussion and commentary on topics of interest to the Innovation Command.
Welcome, innovators, to the fourth episode of Bullcast. Today, I'm joined by two members of our Legal Command Task Force, Majors Quinn Gilchrist and Evan Williams. As always, the views of our speakers and guests are their own. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me today.
Quinn, over to you.
Thank you, sir. And good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, 75th Innovation Command. If you're listening to this podcast, you are taking one of many important steps to CYA, which we'll focus today on means call your attorney. Now, turning to CYA, let me make sure this podcast also starts also informing you of who your other attorneys are for all business operations and procurement law issues. For the Austin Group and IAAG, I have the privilege of serving as a senior legal advisor. For the Mountain Group, as you mentioned, sir, we have Major Evan Williams. And for the Boston Group and Support Group, we have Captain Matt Nuringer. Turning now to the topic of post-government employment, this reference for this podcast are as follows, sir. 18 U.S.C. Section 208, acts affecting personal financial interests, which we're going to talk a lot about today. 41 U.S.C. Sections 2101 and 2107, formerly known as, which I love, the Procurement Integrity Act. 18 U.S.C. Section 207, restrictions on former officers, employers, and elected officials of the executive and legislative branches. 5 CFR Part 2635, standards of ethical conduct for employees of the executive branch. 5 CFR Part 2641, post-employment conflict of interest restrictions, which we want to talk about as well. 5 CFR Part 2640, interpretations, exemptions, and waiver guidance. The last one is 48 CFR Part 203, improper business practices and personal conflicts of interest. Now, Colonel Felder, you've been in for a long time. I'm curious, have you ever known of a colleague, either an officer or enlisted member, that retired from the Army, then worked as a government contractor?
Hey, you know, you say I've been in a long time. You make me feel really old, but it's funny. About half the people that I've served with or worked with in my time in the military, when they left, have gone and done exactly that. And, you know, they often kind of panic over that alphanumeric soup that you just threw out there. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to you helping guide our innovators through that.
Sir, you know what happens? The key is to making sure that we all comply with all the rules and regulations, as previously stated, yes, that alphabet soup you mentioned, or as we continue to emphasize, CYA, call your attorney before you decide to even seek working for a contractor after federal service. And by the way, what we'll discuss today will also apply to those situations when you leave federal service. Let's say as an active duty or AGR personnel, again, you haven't retired yet, but you want to go work for or want to work for a private contractor or firm. Again, CYA. Now, after speaking with your attorney, it looks like, again, we have the senior legal advisor of the Mountain View Group here, who's also an attorney for an important federal agency. Major Evan Williams is joining us. Could you introduce yourself to the group?
Sure thing. It's great to be here. My name's Evan Williams, and in my Army Reserve capacity, I'm the senior legal advisor for the Mountain View Group out of California. And in my civilian capacity, as Major Gilchrist said, I work for the United States Government Accountability Office. And for those that are not familiar, that's a legislative agency that has the mission of collecting, analyzing, and reporting information about federal programs and services. So thanks, Major Gilchrist. Very glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Major Williams. In this podcast, we're going to demonstrate some important principles that will guide our innovators as they navigate the legal principles of post-government employment restrictions that also apply while they are in service. Now, let's start with the purpose of these restrictions. Again, you mentioned, Major Williams, that you work at GAO. Do you mind discussing the purposes of these restrictions?
Sure thing. So there are four main purposes of these rules and regulations. The first is to prevent conflicts of interest. The second is to promote economy in the federal government. And the third is to expand employment opportunities in the federal system. And the last is to preserve the public's confidence in government integrity.
In your experience, Major Williams, do you see how these purposes of the restrictions really impact our federal system, and especially with regards to the procurement system?
I do. You know, I've seen both agency personnel and contractors alike take these rules very seriously, which I think definitely promote the goals I just listed. For instance, I've seen a situation where government personnel brought a potential conflict to the supervisor, who in turn consulted with the attorney. the folks came to a decision that that particular government employee needed to recuse themselves from a certain procurement. And obviously this addresses the first purpose, to avoid a conflict of interest, but we can also see how such an action also serves the purpose of, you know, preserving the public's confidence in government integrity. Relatedly, you know, having these clear rules helps expand employment opportunities in the federal system, because through these rules, potential government employees are aware of their left and right limits. And like Colonel Felder said earlier, you know, folks, you know, will typically move from the private sector into government and maybe back out to the private sector. And I think it's just important that folks realize that they can do these things, but there are rules and regulations that that govern that kind of movement.
Yeah, thanks for that, Major Williams. You know, as lawyers, and you mentioned it in some of the scenarios discussed about recusal, is that I always ask, what do we need as lawyers to properly advise our clients and ensure that they are protected? Specifically, you know, what exactly do you need to provide legal advice in this regard?
Well, I always request in writing a client questionnaire for a legal opinion. And in this case, the government has a form for it. It's a DD form 2945, which is the Post-Government Employment Advice Opinion Request. Major Gilchrist, would you please explain this form?
Yeah, of course. And as always, there is a form for everything. This form is what we referenced earlier by your ethics attorney in order to determine the proper rules and regulations that apply to your specific situation. Every case, as you mentioned earlier, and every person is different, but I always advise clients to be honest about their situation and get this to their attorney sooner rather than later. The situation changes, you know, just update the form. Now, turning to that form you mentioned, again, the form, DD form 2945, I have it in front of me, and this will be a form, again, that you can look at even now before you leave federal service. But sections 1-5, just basic admin information regarding you. Section 6 informs us how you would like to receive your legal opinion letter, either via email or via postal service. Section 7 should always be military for our military personnel, assuming you will all are making a request as a service member who is then transitioning to civilian status. So again, military is the first portion to check there. Section 8 and 9 relate to your current organization at the time you're submitting the request. Specifically for Section 9, it is important that you list your actual supervisor who knows and can attest to your work, as there may be times when your attorney advises that you be pulled from a certain project, or your attorney may need information about what you did for a certain government contract. Again, knowing your actual supervisor is a critical point. Section 10, this section could in theory change as you may be resigning, or you may have a discipline issue, or you may be retiring. Section 13, this is a very important section, as a lot of times clients seek to work during their terminal leave. So again, a lot of us have terminal leave before we transition. You want to work, you have to put in that request on this form. Section 15 and 16 are basic questions regarding whether you have received a prior ethics opinion. So again, no ethics opinion shopping here. You need to attest if you got an ethics opinion from a specific attorney, and that you also have to mention if you filled out your financial disclosure form. The last major section I like to talk about is the meat and potatoes. So this is section 17. It's one of the principles that Major Williams had mentioned, which is conflicts of interest. In sum, you have to disclose within the last 2 years whether you have had to take any action to resolve a potential, and I say again, potential conflict of interest situation. Again, as Major Williams mentioned, one particular client, they had to recuse himself from a project. That's one of those situations you would have to report. Again, CYA well beforehand and keep your records. I can always keep going if you like, Major Williams.
Well, actually, Major Gilchrist, I think you hit the main parts of that form, spotted the key there, and that is CYA, call your attorney, which I believe is really the main thing that the Tech Scout should remember. Another question is, you know, what are some practical implications that we should advise our Tech Scouts and colleagues now in preparation for a potential transition to the private sector?
Yeah, thanks for that. I generally advise our Tech Scouts and really any team member that is in the procurement pipeline or contracting pipeline, I like to call it, to keep a running memo of procurement activities. Key items to have on this memo are the dates, the names of the contractor firms involved, and a summary of your involvement in this activity. In fact, the actual brief for post-government employment requires these basic information. 1, describe recent positions held in a description of the duties and responsibilities of that position. And 2, the specific contract name/title if you worked on any contract while in these positions. As a practical matter, I received even a request last week from one of our innovators, wherein he was tasked by Army Futures Command to provide a, what I call a RFI, bid packet review. So request for information, bid packet review for a small business. Again, our team member was not a contracting officer. He's not a contracting officer representative, but he was involved tangentially with the board who would make a decision to award a specific contract to a specific contractor. As such, our scout would likely need to report this service when transitioning to civilian position. So what he did is he took that memo that I advised him to have weeks ago, and he added this particular contract activity to it.
Well, no, Major Gil, because I mean, it seems like one of the main tasks we're trying to do here is really just, you know, prevent a conflict of interest or even prevent the appearance of a conflict of interest. Is that what I'm getting here?
Yeah, you're spot on, Major Williams. So, you know, one of the primary tasks of that statute, one of them I mentioned, 18 United States Code Section 208, prohibits an employee from participating in any capacity in any particular matter in which he or she has a financial interest if the particular matter will have a direct and predictable effect on that interest. No, really what that means and the main purposes for post-government considerations is that our team members may not work for an assignment that will affect the financial interest of someone with whom the team member will either have an arrangement for employment or is negotiating employment.
And so in those situations, it seems for our team members who may have a conflict of interest or a potential conflict of interest situation is to, one, either, you know, disqualify themselves for the project, or two, seek a waiver to participate. And the key is that the team member, you know, in deciding which option is the best, must communicate this conflict of interest to his or her supervisor. And as a reminder, negotiating employment under these rules is defined rather broadly. So even going to a lunch with a prospective employer could be considered negotiating employment.
Yeah. So again, Major Williams, I believe in these situations, it is better to CYA again.
Yes. Conflict of interest scenarios are always analyzed in the present tense. So that's good to remember. So for example, if an employee decides to interview for a position and then decides not to work for that company, then he or she is free to work later on a project matter involving that company.
Yeah, so in essence, you know, every situation is very unique. You know, it looks like you, myself, and, you know, Captain Erringer are going to be pretty busy.
Yeah, yes, I definitely think that we will.
You know, I want to thank first Colonel Felder and Major Williams for joining this podcast, as this is the first of many podcast series on this topic of post-government employment. In future episodes, we will also like to discuss other restrictions and considerations for post-government employment, like working on terminal leave or receiving a gift like a travel reimbursement for a job interview and so much more. Colonel Felder, any final words, sir?
Hey, you know, thanks, Quinn and Evan. It was really great to hear you guys on this topic today. I like that you've set us up for the full employment for the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate and Legal Command Task Force. I do think that you're right. Call your attorney. It's always better to be proactive. And because the facts matter here, the more information that one of our innovators can give us, the better able we'll be able to provide legal advice as folks are seeking employment or looking to make the transition from the uniform side to the civilian workforce. Just to reiterate there, you can certainly contact your assigned legal advisor or senior legal advisor. So that's, you know, Quinn, that's you for the Austin group, and Evan, that's you for Mountain View, and it's Captain Erringer for the Boston group. But you can also contact any of the other members of the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate. We do have a full-time deputy. Sometimes that may be easier for our folks to reach out to Lieutenant Colonel Cave as a full-timer rather than some of the TPUs. And we'll take care of coordinating and staffing stuff out as needed. So it really means any of us, we are here to help. Gentlemen, it was great having you on today, and I'm looking forward to our next opportunity to talk about post-government employment and other conflicts of interest and ethics issues.
Thanks, sir.
On behalf of the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate, thank you for listening to this podcast. If you have a follow-up question or a topic you'd like us to address in a future episode, we encourage you to reach out to us. We're here to help.